is some picks. Hello, everybody. This is David Bixenspan here for the second episode of The Bix Show. And I've got a very special guest, someone who I think I can genuinely say is my very favorite person in professional wrestling, one and only Hall of Fame announcer Lance Russell.
Wow, I do love the introduction. Now, just live up to the rest of it. David, it's good to be here with you. Thank you very much for asking me.
You know, it's my pleasure. So I had wanted to talk to you anyway, and then it looked like the timing worked out that I hadn't realized at first that you've got an appearance coming up on April 17th and 18th at PopCon in Evansville, which is a comic book, science fiction, etc. convention, and they're doing a whole Memphis wrestling type of event where it's going to be you, I believe it's you, Jerry Lawler, Jimmy Valiant, Bill Dundee, and Doug Gilbert, who's scheduled right now?
Bill Dundee and Doug Gilbert right now, and Mark James will be there with his books for sale and all of that. Mark, who I think most wrestling fans are familiar with that name now. My Mark is, I believe he's done about 21 totally books that he's written along, some, a lot of them by himself, but some of them with Jimmy Cornette and all that. So Mark will be there, but I don't think he's appearing on any of the shows that we're going to be doing on Memphis. We've got, they just added one, and Jeff Osborne called me and wanted to know if we could handle a special Lance Russell show on Friday night. I said, shoot, I don't know that I can handle it on any night. We'll find out, so let's do it. So they added that because fortunately, I am tickled to say that there's just so much interest in Memphis wrestling. It never ceases to amaze me, but I'll take it and say, boy, that was a lot of fun.
So you're going to be doing a Q&A type thing. Is that the first night then?
Yes, on the first night, it's exactly that. This is supposed to be one of those special ticket deals. I'm for it, Jeff. I hope it goes well for you. Where we'll have a limited number of people who will be present in the room, and it'll be more like you and I are sitting here talking about. We have so much fun. And don't think I'm going to forget about that Terry Funk story. I want you to repeat that. Anyhow, that's what we're going to be doing. It's like you and I are sitting here talking on the phone. We'll, how many ever that go there will be in Friday night, and we'll be sitting there acting like we've known each other for 200 years. No, the one nice thing about it is that it's amazing how many times I hear the same stories, I mean, the same questions and the same comments about Saturday morning. I was over at my grandma and grandma's house, and boy, we watched that wrestling in Memphis all the time. But I don't care where they're from, where, if they had the tape in the territory, the story is the same, and I'm happy to say that they're saying it with a smile on their face, and I feel good about that, David.
Yeah, I'll have all the info in the show description, but if anyone wants more details, how to get tickets, all that, the website is popconevansville.com. And a couple things coming out of that, you were just talking about, same questions for people, whether they were in a town like Evansville that got the TV, or they were trading tapes or whatever, that it's always the same things. Now, that kind of reminded me that I remember something Dave Meltzer wrote a few months ago, I think he said that you first got in touch with him. It might have even been before he started doing The Observer, because you were so fascinated by the idea that people from all around the country were trading tapes of the Memphis TV show.
Yes, it's true, as a matter of fact. To be honest with you, the very first, I can't tell you this was the first contact. It was the first time I had ever seen Dave, and it was at a fan. They were having their meeting in Memphis because they had called and gotten an invitation from Jarrett to come attend the studio show and whatever else was happening and do some of it. And we participated, we being the people who were doing the Memphis show, and we participated with them and did let them assume different characters and all that sort of thing. It's kind of a fun deal. And then we had, like, on a Saturday, no, it wasn't Saturday morning, because that was, we were on the air Saturday morning. So it must have been Saturday afternoon sometime. We had a Q&A deal with all the members who had attended from around the country. And I know you didn't ask me about this, but I thought I'd tell you anyhow. So we sat there and they asked, and that's why I repeat my biggest, I guess it's the biggest faux pas in terms of wrestling. And I said, what do you think is going to happen with this Vince McMahon taking over wrestling in all the markets? And I said, I think it's going to be great for wrestling because he's got the money to where he's going to produce high quality, excellent productions and all that sort of jazz. And I think it's going to spur the rest of us to maybe go ahead and do things that are a little classier and a little better. And I turned out to be wrong on all of those points. It ran most of them out of business, and Vince bought the rest of them out. So anyhow, that was kind of an interesting meeting with Dave, and it was a lot of fun. And it is the first time I'd heard. I couldn't imagine how some of these people, and I've told you, I think, the story of a guy. I was doing a radio talk show in Las Vegas and with a friend, and the first guy I had on there, this guy was saying, hey, Lance, I'm calling you from Australia. And I said, Sam Hill, I know our signal doesn't go that far. We're pretty good, but not that good. And then he told me about this tape trading and how he traded and all that stuff. And I got more information on it then, but it was interesting to me that I guess it's trashy to say it, but I really couldn't imagine what in the world that we were doing, that anybody around the world wanted to see what we were doing in Memphis. And now I know, because it all wasn't like it was in Memphis. That was my explanation for it.
And with the convention being in Evansville, you were telling me that the best you can remember, it's because it was not a town where even into the 80s or anything that you really even taped matches for TV, even for the secondary show where they show house show stuff. Did you think you probably haven't been in Evansville in at the very least 20 years, probably longer.
I think that's true. I think that's absolutely true. And what you said is the way it happened. And the rare time, and this would happen with Louisville or Lexington or any of the other places, if they had a program that for some reason they wanted an interview. Okay, Wayne Ferris, who was Jerry Lawler's cousin, started wrestling and started there, obviously, in the area where Jerry was. And he later went on to help me, David. What was his name with the WWF?
Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah, Honky Tonk Man, sure. I know it's hard. People, you don't remember that? That's right, I don't remember that. Sorry about that, sports fans. But anyhow, they had a, this one sticks because it was so long. We must have taken an hour and 90 minutes to do this recording. But they wanted an interview. Jerry wanted to break Honky Tonk Man in, and so we went and I did interviews, the same thing over and over and over and over. But that's how we would end up. They wouldn't know that they needed this or wanted, Jerry wanted this or what, and we would go to on Evansville or Louisville or Lexington or someplace like that and do interviews or some other reason that brought us into the community. But that was the reason that I wasn't very often in Evansville, and I really am looking forward. I honestly am telling you, I am looking forward to being back there. I can't imagine that there's anybody still alive that knew me when I made one of my rare visits up there. But I'm looking forward to this one. And I'll tell you the honest fact, one thing I'm looking forward to, as long as we're on this subject, I thought I'd delve off here, David.
Sure.
If you don't mind. And that is to say, I'm interested to see the people that come there. I want to see what they're talking about and if it's similar to basically the questions and all that I get in Memphis, because they had the same video brainwashing that we gave them in Memphis, but I just am curious to see whether it follows along with the attitude of the show, the way it was presented and all of that. So it'll be interesting to see. And if you ever ask me back, I'll tell you all about it when I come back.
Oh, what? You think I wouldn't ask you back?
We'll find out. We'll find out what kind of buddy I got right here. All right.
So but you've got this coming up, and you've been out and about a bit lately. I guess it was the end of January, so a couple months ago, that you were at that Memphis Grizzlies game where they did the wrestling theme night, which I saw some of the videos that people there put on YouTube. It looked fantastic.
Yeah, the way they had that, Dave and I were sitting looking down on the ring, and I don't mean like way up. They brought the ring up in the air, and we were up higher than the ring was, and it was just neat. The first thing was to have a first-class operation like Memphis Grizzlies like that to recognize and have Memphis Wrestling Night there. I know it doesn't take much to make me smile a little, but I was so happy about that. And when they asked Dave and I both if we could make it, it took us about a jillionth of a second to say, yeah, boy, we'll be there. And it was great working with Dave again. But that whole thing was, it didn't hurt that there were 20,000 people sitting in the big FedEx stadium. And so that was terrific. That was just a marvelous experience. And the basketball team won that night, and they've been winning pretty regularly all along this season. They're an excellent team.
Right, and it was against the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are kind of their big rival, right?
Big, yeah. They're the ones that have knocked Memphis out of contention in several things down the line. And so when you mention Oklahoma City Thunder, they boo right away. So it was great. And you mentioned that, and there was something else. Oh, I know. More in the neighborhood, first week in March. That's the month that's just behind us here.
Yeah.
You believe that has passed away already? Yeah. But first week in March, the Gulf Coast Wrestlers convention was held in Mobile. And this is one that I used to go to all the time, and it became a little more difficult for me to go, so I was unable to attend a lot of them. And this is my son, youngest son, took me over there, and we had a great time there seeing people that just is hard to believe, guys that I hadn't seen and hadn't seen wrestle in even longer than that. So that was a fun time, too, not to step on the Memphis thing, but did want to remind you that I had been to the Gulf Coast.
Well, actually, I had it in my notes, so I made sure. I made sure that I would ask you about that. But I did want to talk about the Grizzlies thing a little more, and that.
Yes, sure.
I think for people who haven't seen it, they really should look it up on YouTube or wherever else there might be the clips from it, because I think some people were expecting less than they actually gave. I think partially because people didn't think they'd be able to get a ring out there at halftime. They figured, well, it's a basketball game. They're not going to roll it out or anything. It'll probably just be Lawler, you know, fighting the mascot on the court. No, they set up a ring on this kind of, I guess, makeshift scaffolding, I guess, kind of right next to the elevated platform where the announcers sit.
Yeah.
And it's, so yeah, you were saying that you were actually, so yeah, you were sitting kind of right above that. So was it difficult to do it that way instead of looking at a monitor or just the ring right in front of you, or was it about the same, or just what was it different to
call?
Well,
I want to tell you, it gave me a kick because the angle was such that it just, Dave and I both agreed that it felt different to be doing it at that above angle kind of thing and with the guys. And I guess more than anything, that really kept our tongue getting ready, the big inhale, because we didn't know when Lawler or Jerry Calhoun, who was refereeing, they had even arranged to get the Jerry back, and he almost made, you know, Lawler, that devil, he does stuff like that. He whipped him into the rope, the referee into the ropes, you know. And I thought a couple of times we were going to see bodies really sailing in the air. Because on that one side away, so thank goodness it was away from Dave and I, it was wide open. And I mean, when you went out there, you really went out there. And you just, it scared us at first when they pointed out what we were going to do and where we were going to be. It scared us. It's like, whoa, man, how are they going to wrestle in there? Because, you know, you see so many accidental on purpose and otherwise bodies go sailing through those ropes, Dave. That's what we thought was going to happen, and almost did a couple of times, or it looked like it did. And Dave and I took a little, yeah. But it was a spectacular setup. Let me tell you, these people, I mean, this was just first class, like they really are, and they were attentive to what we needed to do and what they needed to do. Oh no. So what I was saying, they really were attentive and had guys that were curious about what we were doing and helping us do what we had to do. And yeah, it was a blast. And when I first heard they and Jerry Lawler called me and said, "Hey man, you'll never guess what's going to happen. Blah 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 blah." Yeah, and the Grizzlies are going to have a wrestling night. Wow, I couldn't believe it. And then when I heard what kind of the ticket sales there were on, I said, wow, wow, wow. They stole that sucker out. That's what they had, that what they call a hard, sold-out event. This was hard all the way. It was really great.
So as for the Gulf Coast Wrestlers reunion, who were you able to catch up with? Who else was there this time?
Oh, the Gulf Coast? Oh, man, now you would ask me that. I tell you, somebody I hadn't seen. They used to wrestle as a team. Brothers. Oh, that's such a shame. Well, I apologize for that, David, but I can't.
I'm trying to think. Did they wrestle in Memphis?
Yes, they wrestled in, but they wrestled everywhere else too.
I'm trying to think. Oates Brothers?
No, and I could describe
It wasn't one of the twin teams, was it?
No, it wasn't a twin team, but it was a brother team. And
trying to think, has there been a lot? I'm just trying to think.
Odd.
I think. Yeah, I don't. I'm just trying to think. Well, there have been so many different brother teams.
Yeah, I know, and I'm trying to think. Somebody, it's like Tony, but that's, I don't know that that's right. Anyhow, maybe it'll pop back, and if it does, right in the middle of whatever we're doing, whether I'm sleepy, whether you're sleepy, it could be then, and then I'll tell you if I remember it. But it was such a kick to see so many people, and a lot of them. That's the reason I had a hard time, too, remembering the names, because you're talking, you know, 20 and 30 years between when I've seen a lot of these people, and I hadn't seen them often, but it was really great to be able to sit around, and it's fun how much fun it is, and I just never get tired of talking, whether it's in Memphis or whether it's any other part of the world that I run into folks that want to talk Memphis wrestling. I am ready to go, and it I really enjoy it. And the Gulf Coast thing was, I'll tell you who I was looking to see, who has got the strongest grip in America, in the world, probably.
Danny Hodge?
Danny Hodge, sure. I'm hoping to see Danny. I had seen him. He came every year when I used to go there earlier, and it was great to see him because this guy, you know, you talk about legends. I had two of them that I just really, really flipped out every time I got to work with them. And all. One was Lou Thesz, who was one of my very favorites. If you were thinking about a world heavyweight champion, it's got to be Lou Thesz. I mean, the guy, I've said this a lot before, and I probably said it to you before, but I believe it. If you were thinking of a guy who's a champion, here's a guy who is, you know, he wasn't 6'7 or anything like that, but he was about 6'3 somewhere in there, 6'4, I don't know, and he was a lean 235 pounds or something. And he just had the manners of a champion, and he was that kind of guy. And he's one of them that I really enjoyed working with. Well, I enjoyed working with a lot of guys, but he's a stick out. And the other one, of course, is Danny Hodge. Good night. Everybody know Danny. I mean, this guy, he can't really crack a pair of pliers with his bare hands. Oh, yeah? Boy, I'll tell you, I told you that story, too. I had the guys go down from the production staff and get me a pair of pliers out of a hardware store right down the street and don't tell anybody and give them back to me where I got, nobody's going to gimmick with them. They also went to a grocery store and got a little sack of apples and brought those back, and I was going to show this guy up right there on television because he didn't know this was going to happen. When I came out, I was being sneaky, and I pulled the apple, and he took and just ground. I mean, how in the world you ever get that strong? I know how he did it because he told me what his secret was. He grew up when he was studying for homework and that stuff, and he took newspapers and used to grab them in his hand and squeeze them into little balls, and then he'd try to make 3 points with them in the waste paper basket when he finished. Anyhow, that's the way he developed that amazing strength. And his story about going into, I said, Danny, is that really true? And you don't have to have a pair of pliers. Well, I said, yeah, it just so happened. And he took a pair of pliers, a brand new pair of pliers, and he took those things and just closed his hand on the handles and Ding! That thing busted in half. So those were two of my favorite guys that I enjoyed working with and being around and all.
And he's still able to do it. Like when people go to Cauliflower Alley or the Iowa Wrestling Hall of Fame things, they always bring pliers and apples to give to Danny Hodge.
That's right.
For him to crush in front of everyone.
Without a question of a doubt, he has made applesauce out of more raw apples than anybody in the world, and he's busted brand new pliers more than anybody in the world. He's really an amazing guy and a heck of a guy, and he was a lot of fun to be with. But he was unable to be there this year, and so I didn't get a chance to see him again. And some guys, I guess, are noticeable by their absence. Who is the big bear from that was the guy that was booking and all of that kind of stuff at WCW for a while? Arn Anderson and Ole Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Ole used to come there, and he didn't come every year, but he came there and enjoyed sitting and spending 4.5 hours on Saturday afternoon with him or so. That was fun. And he, I understand, is not here, not well, and was unable to come. So I'm sorry I missed him, but I saw a lot of guys that I can't remember their name. it was good. And the good Lord willing, when the first week in March comes again next year, if the health is still with it, I'll be ready to tell you about next year's first week in March visit to the championship, the reunion that takes place. Okay, next.
So before we move on to some other stuff, one other thing that you did recently was that you sat down with WWE because you recorded an interview with them to do for the Jerry Lawler documentary on his DVD that's coming out next month.
Yeah, they asked after we got together there and all, they asked me, they were doing an introductory thing on Lawler, and they figured that I probably knew him as well as, from a talking standpoint, I knew him as well as anybody in the country. And so they asked me if I'd sit down, and shoot, we did. We did maybe 35, 45 minutes just on Lawler. Boy, that's a lot of Lawler. I'm going to tell you that right now. Oh, I was just kidding, Jerry. it is. I did do that. And what I don't know, I think my inside source tells me that he's got a DVD coming out before long. Is that correct?
Right. It's coming out next month.
Next month. Okay. Well, interesting guy. I can tell you that. That's for sure. So I would say if you can't escape all of the conversation about it, go ahead and buy it and enjoy it. No, you will. You'll enjoy it. It's kind of interesting. And I don't know how much he'll do on his art, but whatever he does is not enough. I mean, that's how good he is. He is really good and as an artist.
I was just going to say that I really hope that they have a decent section on all of his artwork and all that.
Oh, man, I do too. I hope it's for the people who are available there to pick up the DVD, because they will not believe that after seeing Jerry for so many years and so many fights and all that kind of stuff, they won't believe this is the same guy. And it is, and it's even more amazing when you see some of his sensitive art that is just great. He's a great comic book artist admirer. He can tell you every well-known, perfected artist that ever did comic book characters and all that in the world. And I will tell you right now, he can sit down with them and stroke for stroke can match them all. And, okay, done my part, Jerry. I did what I said. Now, take me to dinner some night, please. Oh, you've already done that. I see. Okay.
So, actually, so yesterday when we were talking, and I was telling you what was on the DVD, we're talking a little bit about Terry Funk and how the Empty Arena match is on there, which is, you know, probably, if you were going to name a couple, just probably the Memphis moments that are the most famous to wrestling fans, I mean, that's probably right up there with them. And you were, I don't remember how we got to talking about it. Somehow I ended up telling you my favorite personal Terry Funk story, and then you...
Wait, I've forgotten that already. Can you tell me that again? Tell me, David.
So I was at one of the Weekend of Champions fan conventions years ago. So I was like, I'm thinking this is 1993, I think. So I'm 8, maybe almost 9 years old. And I met Terry Funk, got his autograph, and he's very nice. And he signs it, "Stay out of jail, Terry Funk." So then about 10 years later, I'm at an independent show where he's wrestling Lawler, and he's walking along the back of the room, you know, going to his gimmick table and shaking hands with all the fans, like where I was sitting, and he shakes hands with me, keeps going, and then he stops, turns around, and says, "So, did you stay out of jail?"
You're not going to believe it. I told you, my son and I talked a lot of wrestling, and one of the things that I did was tell him that story. He's not with us right now, but yeah, he's out, and I told him that, and when I said that, he said, "He did not say that." 10 years later, I said, "That's what David told me for a fact, and he didn't tell those lies like some people, you know." Anyhow,
I do have witnesses
at that. That is a great story.
And I do have witnesses too, by the way.
Okay.
So that's good. So then you started telling me, and then you said you wanted to maybe save it for today, some story about Terry Funk and a Cadillac.
Yes, it was. Terry used to rent Cadillacs when we were on the road with WCW. And so he had no hesitation. If he could find somebody who would do it, he would say, "Hey, Lance, you going back to Tulsa tonight?" We had wrestled somewhere near there or something, whatever. And I, yeah, sure. He said, "Listen, I can't get back there right now, and I still got some people that I promised to see. And would you take my car back to?" Well, yeah, sure. Terry'd be glad to. And so he'd find somebody, and if he had things to do, he would find somebody that would drive his car back. And tell the truth, Terry. Don't be looking that way at me. Anyhow, and so one of the stories, which kind of scared me a little bit, Terry is taking a car back himself. And he comes along, and there was no convenient way to get in the road that he wanted to get back to take the car back. And there's a little shortcut. And he comes to a big rise in the road. And Terry starts, and he drove that car right straight up over that cliff. Now, this is the story. I wasn't there, so I can't tell you this for a fact. He told me about it. And he drove that car right up over the highway and the hump and that rope and all, and he got it back almost in one piece. And that was the big Terry Funk story. I mean, it's just amazing the stuff that the guy does, because he has no fear. Now, if you were going to take one wrestler, there's at least one. There's a couple others that are in the same category that you were saying, "Did this guy get afraid of that, or afraid of this guy or that guy?" And with Terry, there would be none of them. I don't care. That's the reason I, when he was in Japan or any place else, and they started doing those wild Bernese toenails off with gasoline or whatever kind of matches that they used to have, you would find right in the middle of it Terry Funk. More, he's in more of those kind of matches than anybody twice in the world, I'm sure. Because he would do them. He had absolutely no fear whatsoever. And I kind of felt that way, wish that I had had that way when we got into that empty arena thing with Lawler. Wow, was that a, that was, I told you that it was a scary thing because, you know, you just depend on certain atmospheres to help you with your description and commentary on a match or something like that. And it wasn't until I got in the arena with nobody but Lawler and Funk and the cameraman and realized we got a whole match going on this thing. And so that was kind of a scary situation that occurred. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, that I was just thinking as you were saying that, I mean, like, when you're calling a match, I mean, you're like the wrestlers. You kind of have to feed off the crowd. So when there's no crowd, it's a harder, you kind of have to work to kind of get the emotions more on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And I found that out, and I am here to verify everything Dave Fix's fan said is true. You have to be on your own when there's nobody there to help you. Wow. It really was interesting. I mean, it was, I'm not going to say fun exactly, but it was exciting to have that marked out on the bucket list and scratch it off. So I guess that's what we did in that instance.
Now, Terry Funk is not someone who would be in this category, but some of my favorite things I've watched you do on watching old Memphis tapes is when you kind of had to rescue a bad interview, like when it was someone, usually someone starting out, and I think Jim Cornette talks about his, just how bad it was, and how you almost had to kind of cut the promo for him. What, looking back, just kind of in general, like, what was kind of, would you think, like, what in general were your ways of trying to rescue a bad interview? If someone, like, if someone's in front of you, just kind of, it's someone new, they're kind of tripping over their words like I was a second ago. What would you tend to do in that situation? What would be the first thing you do?
The first thing I would do is, in particular, if we had mentioned a little earlier, Honky Tonk Man, if you were getting with a guy who was going to be a big mouth and heel and all, I might say, you know, this guy, Bixen's fan that you're working with tonight, this guy's got a reputation of probably breaking more arms than anybody I know of. Surely you don't want to get in there and give me this big bravo stuff. And, you know, you kind of put words in their mouth about what it's so. And he would say, hey, listen, I'll tell you right now, I don't mind being in there when, you know, he picks it up and says the same thing right back to you. And that's just an example. I'm not saying it's a great example or not, but it does the point of how you would maybe untrack them when you didn't necessarily prefer that they didn't say exactly the same thing that you. And but most of the time they did. When you would do something like that, they would say the same thing because they couldn't think of anything, you know? And we'd stop, and then we would go, okay, oh, look, here we go. Now, here's what we're talking about. You have got to say that, well, listen, I know your mama. Man, do I know your mama, you know, and that kind of stuff. And so they start doing, they pick up the idea of what, if you were going to do as a heel, if you were going to do an interview, what would you say? And so that's what you kind of say, and you hope that they get the hint and come along. And most of the guys did. I could just name list. Well, one of them is going to be up in Evansville with us, and that's Bill Dundee. Here's a guy that came in with George Barnes from Australia, and George was a little bit more attuned to what was happening in the interview thing. Not all that much. And Billy was, it's hard to believe when you look at him today, and when he was working regularly all the time, it's hard to believe how good he got. But he was bad when he started. But man, did he turn out good. And it's just, it was great to see Guy. Well, the same thing was true with Honky Tonk. Wayne was a very good interview. And so it was kind of interesting, but they don't all start. Nobody but Lawler starts right at the top of the heap. And he was that good from the first time he opened his mouth, just about. And that's two dinners you owe me, Terry. Yeah.
So looking back, it always seemed like when you were calling matches with some of like the really good technical wrestlers, especially some of the British wrestlers like Tony Charles or Billy Robinson or Adrian Street or Johnny Marlin, that it seems like you really got a kick out of those. So I just wanted to hear some of your thoughts on some of those British wrestlers and their style in general, and also a little bit about Tony Charles, because someone asked about that, and also because he passed away somewhat recently, and you also knew him because he lived near you for years. So just what are your thoughts both on him and on kind of on seeing that style in general?
Well, it was to me, it's kind of, you know, Americans love British accents anyhow. So right off the bat, you're starting with a win situation when you're working with somebody like Tony or Bill Dundee or somebody like that. You like the accent. It just kind of gets to Americans. They love it. So but also and I'm not going to say that it would necessarily go over and fill the coin box up with ticket sales and all that if you did that kind of wrestling in America all the time. It would not have worked all the time in Memphis. But because of the people like to see a lot of different types of things like that, and it's not just straight who's the best amateur wrestler who is wrestling professional now, and that. But I tell you, dropped in at the right time, it was just spectacular. And I have, I'm sure, told you firsthand or third hand or whatever the story about Bill Dundee and Tony Charles. And that was really, really something. They put together a match which was held in Jackson, Tennessee, which is 82 miles northeast of Memphis, and had a really nice gymnasium over there. And so they wanted a situation where Billy Dundee was put over. He was destined to be the winner, and he was wrestling with Tony. And when they went in with the understanding this is a straight wrestling match. I mean, this is not anybody picking up chains or anything like that. And this is totally different than you normally see. And Tony said, well, wait a minute. I didn't know that was the way this thing was going to be ended and all, and that I mean, I love Bill, and he's a good worker and all that, blah, 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 blah. And so, look, there won't be any cameras there. Nobody except the people that are there for the match will see it, and they don't. That'll be the only thing, and a promise not to show it back on television. I'm laughing to think about all the lies that were told to convince Tony to do this match with Bill. But that's what they did. And so if you watch and you ever get the chance to see it, David, I want you to take a look and keep as we come down toward the end of that match. And it was a good long session with Dundee and Tony. When you come down to the end of it, all of a sudden you will see Tony Charles stop and point out into the audience and say, "You son of a gun! Camera right there!" Gee, how did that guy sneak that camera in? Just because he's been working for us for 10 years. So anyhow, he looks out there, and here's a guy with a camera back away from the ring, so it's not easy to see, but he's back up in the audience, and he is taping this thing. And Tony being the kind of really good guy that he is, he went along with it, and so that was it, and Bill came through with a win in the match, but it was so great that moment when everything was just straight and had just been just perfect, and then all of a sudden he stops and saying, "You son of a gun, there's a camera up there. You lied to me." And it was just happenstance. Now, I loved it. I mean to tell you, it was such a pleasure. And I'm not saying I didn't love the other, but I think the fans know I loved it. I loved it Memphis style or whatever. But I had not seen a match to this equal. I'm not going to say there weren't any. Boy, every time you saw Billy Robinson, if you had the right opponent, you could see some of this, because he was great. And that's why it was a particular treat, because it was a change from the norm, and I enjoyed it very, very much. And if I looked at it every night, I'm sure that I'm sure I'd enjoy it every night. No, I would say it might not, might get old like everything else. I don't know. But the guys were fun to, Tony was great to do interviews with, because he knew what the Americans liked to hear and how they liked to hear it. And he was excellent. Bill Dundee is that way. Billy is just a super, super mouth. And I still enjoy working with him as I do Lawler. And we were talking about Gordy. That pretty well covers my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I've seen that match, and I really do enjoy that match a lot.
Oh, have you seen it? Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what I'm talking about when I say about that. Oh, you have to care.
I don't know if I remember that part. I'm definitely going to rewatch it when we're done, though, because
really?
I don't know if I remember that or not. But
well, I'll tell you one thing. You won't forget it this time. You'll be looking for it, and you'll see, because it's like somebody hit him in the mouth with a big, cold, wet mop or something like that. And it's really worth seeing. So I advise all of you, if you ever see Tony Charles, Bill Dundee, Jackson, Tennessee, stick around. You'll want to see that one too.
Now, pretty much on the complete opposite of the spectrum from that were some of the monsters who came through Memphis, literal monsters, usually when Jerry Lawler was booking. Because of his, I guess because of his love for comic books and old sci-fi movies, yeah, and monster movies and all that, that you had everyone from, Dr. Frank, I think was the first one, and then you had Colossus, and I forget who's the Colossus's partner, but all sorts of guys like that, and eventually at Freddy Krueger and all those guys. What did you think of those guys, and kind of how you would have to present them on TV?
Well, I tell you, at first I thought, what is this? I mean, is this a gag? It was a gag, but it was things caught. I'll tell you how an example of that. Things caught Dave and I, because Lawler was good at keeping it quiet to himself how these things were coming down. And the time we had Dr. Frank up there, and we were sitting at the table, and camera left, which was the side I was sitting on, opposite Dave. Hey, I'm the old guy, remember? And anyhow, on that side of it, the camera left side of it, was this big casket. And I couldn't imagine what in the world we were doing now with a casket out there on the set, or just off the set. And what do you want to do with this? You'll see. And then when we got up close to it, and at whatever the point, I don't remember any lines or anything like that. But what happened was that all of a sudden, it's like Lawler whacks on the side of it, and I hear this from inside. Now, this coffin had been sitting out there for an hour and a half, something like that. And it was kind of like the night that's another story.
Tommy Rich was under the ring in the cage.
Yeah, Tommy Rich was underneath. That's who it was, Tommy Rich. And he was underneath. He comes out as long as he had been under there. Well, I hear this noise, and Dave and I both look at each other. And this was true. We didn't realize what exactly was coming down. But it was a kind of a little scary thing, and I didn't know whether it was a faux pas and that wasn't supposed to happen or what. But anyhow, that's what happened. Now, to get back as a general thing, sometimes even the best laid plans of mice and men and all of that don't work the way they're supposed to, or. And sometimes you got a reaction that was not good. It's like the night that Bill Dundee put up his wife's hair against Lawler, and Lawler's hair against Bill Dundee's wife's hair. He had already gotten Bill Dundee's hair, so he was going after the wife's hair. Now, what I'm saying there and how is when something happens that you weren't expecting. Lawler wins, so we got to bring up Bill Dundee's wife to the ring, and the barber, who is specially assigned to cut hair of wrestlers who lose a hair match, he comes up in the ring, and everybody was hooping and hollering and all. They thought it was great, and it was all of that until they got her in the ring, and the guy, the barber, is standing there looking at me, and what happens now? I said, cut her hair. He looked at me like, are you crazy? A lady? Cut her hair? Get out of here. Anyhow, that's kind of the reaction, what I'm saying. It was a different reaction. I mean, I didn't expect somebody to say, what do I do now? I'm standing there with a pair of scissors, and here's a lady in a head of hair. cut it. That's what you do. And so it shocked me when I didn't want to cut her hair. And the audience right away sensed we are being had. They're not going to cut that lady's hair. And they said if she Dundee lost, they would cut her hair. And so, sure enough, they weren't going to have it any other way, but they were going to cut her hair. And so the barber didn't want to cut her hair. And we had to entice him a little bit. Okay, give me the scissors. And anyhow, he finally ended up and he cut off three or four little strands of it. Well, do you think that was going to satisfy that bloodthirsty fan group that was sitting out there being mad because they weren't going to get a haircut? No, sir, that wasn't going to be the way it was. We were going to get this lady's haircut if the whole first row came up in the ring with scissors and was going to cut the hair. So it was kind of a tense moment in there because the barber just couldn't bring himself into getting, she had reddish hair, and he couldn't bring himself into chopping that hair off with the crowd out there. And half of them saying, well, the first time they said, boo, boo, when he started, you know, to cut the hair. Don't be cutting that lady's hair and all. And then when he didn't cut the hair, whoa, that changed the whole series. Then he started hearing from the audience, cut that hair. They said the loser would lose their hair. Now cut the hair. And people got mad and all that kind of stuff. So it was a tense little situation that took place, David. But we ended up with the hair getting cut, not as short as some people like, but sufficiently to save our skins because we were next. They were going to be up there cutting our hair. We didn't want that, no, because we hadn't signed for a hair match. And that was an interesting happenstance that night when she got her hair cut. I don't know how we got into that, but however we did, I'm glad. There it is. I've said it. Ta-da.
Now, one thing that people don't always realize is that at least before the big promotional split, that in addition to being the wrestling announcer, you were also the, was it program manager or program director of Channel 13?
Well, program director, actually director of programming.
Director of programming, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was.
Yeah, so were there ever any issues where, because of maybe something on the show, they didn't like, whether it was something with blood or anything else, where you kind of had to intervene with other people at the station because of something that happened on the wrestling show?
Yes. It was always, and that's why it was always right on the edge, because, you know, we had guys who had a tendency to cut loose with a foul language of some variety or another, and we really sat down. And I got to tell you this, Jerry Jarrett was absolutely sitting right behind me when I said, I'm telling you, Jerry, we have somebody cut loose with some of that stuff that you've heard that happened in some of these other places, and that's going to be all for the show. And I was serious because I'd been told that. And so it was a constant threat. And the most vivid one, and I think most people remember, is the Joe LeDuc thing. When LeDuc comes out with that axe and cuts his own arm, and that blood starts rolling down that arm, and they're right there. They knew that nobody was going to cut their arm right there on camera. I mean, nobody would be that stupid. And he did it. And when they saw that blood rolling, help. And, you know, it was one of those situations that reinforced the rule because they were dead serious. You have any more of that stuff like that, and we are taking it off. We're going to pre-do it, and we will be certain that nothing is possible to come across there that we don't want on the air. So it was just that simple. And that's why it was an easier thing to help look out for. We had the gorgeous George Jr. or something from Nashville who was wrestling out of Nashville. I don't even remember the guy's name now, but he deliberately got over and got next to me on the and with my microphone there, and he started using the foul language, and that was the end. He got fired, and that was the end of that. But, I mean, that was something we just, there wasn't any playing around, and so the station knew that we had done what we said we would do to keep people from doing just exactly what that guy did. So, yeah, it was an ongoing thing. We, after a while, they knew Jerry was, Jerry Jarrett was serious about this, and when he told them in the dressing room, remember, we don't want any vile language out there, and you do it, you go, you're through. And so, I mean, he was very good about that. So we not only didn't encourage it, we heavily discouraged it. Mm-hmm. And so it was something you constantly had to be aware of, because we knew that it was a show that was subject to criticism, real criticism by a lot of people. So we were very careful about how clean that we tried to keep it. We were serious. And I think for the most part, everybody participated and did a pretty good job. We have, I'll bet you no more than 3 or 4 incidents, camera-wise, that they got on camera. So that's not bad for as long as we did the show. Yeah.
Now, I don't know if I've ever asked you this before, but what, because I guess most of the, you know, the later part of your career was pretty much, at least on television, was wrestling, but I guess earlier in your career, what on the air, at least, had you done besides wrestling?
Well, just about everything. I've done football. A lot of high school football. I did the Jackson Golden Bears. That's when Wink Martindale, who went on to be Tic-Tac-Doe's MC, and you've seen him all across the country, folks. Good old Winky. And I did a lot of football. I did basketball, college, and high school. And I did fight-wise. I did the Golden Gloves. Because Memphis was very strong with the Golden Gloves, and so we started picking up some boxing matches that they wanted to, because Golden Gloves were getting a lot of press and so on. So we started doing it. I got a chance to do a lot of boxing. That's kind of an interesting thing, too, because of the way you have to do it. You can't keep saying the same thing. He hit him. That's the idea, and it's interesting the way you have to keep up with it. It's so fast that you have to double the ante. You didn't ask for a book to be written on just what. That pretty generally is what covered it. I may have done some others. I'd say. Can't think of anything else right now. I always enjoyed watching a lot more than that, but we were looking. Oh, I'll tell you one that was experienced, and that's when it became big on nationwide radio, where they did the broadcast based on a wire operator sitting there watching baseball, and they would call the name of the person out. I mean, not call it out. They would send out a strip of paper with Anderson flies to right center field for a easy out, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's what you'd see, and you recreated. And they had me do a recreation of a football game when the Jackson Golden Bears were red hot and went down to Miami to play one of the big ones in the nation, big high school in the nation. And we were unfortunately working under the El Cheapo directives, and we couldn't go down there live and do it. Guess what? We're going to recreate a football game. They do it with baseball. Let's do it with football. Gee, that's fun.
So this was for radio or for TV?
Yeah, for radio.
Okay.
I'm talking radio, man.
I was going to say, because I couldn't figure out what a recreation would be on TV unless you were just doing a new voiceover.
No, that was all radio. I'm sorry. And on football, I didn't do football on television.
Now, with Memphis being known so much for how well it integrated comedy into the wrestling, as far as that goes, like, what's maybe one moment that stands out to you as far as that?
Well, there were things that guys did in the ring. As a matter of fact, you know, a lot of times, and if you were going into some of the smaller towns, it was more prevalent in some of the smaller towns where they'd do it in the audience and things that were funny, and the guy would bust a belt and the shorts would drop down, or I don't mean that in a bad, that kind of thing sense, but you would have all kind of things happen. I'll tell you one that happened, though, and this was on television, and this was for real. Lawler said, look, hey, can you start? We got the cameras over here. Can you come by the house and we'll start a little thing that's going to set up a deal a little later on. Come by the house. Okay, you know, fine, sure. And so Terry lived kind of on my way to the studio. And so I stopped by his house and I come walking up. Hey, we've got the cameras up here, and we'll just lead into it. You know how to respond to it and all, and we'll do it. Okay, yeah, fine. So I come walking up to the front of this beautiful house, and Jerry's sitting out there, and I start, hey, Jerry, what do you say, man? Beautiful day today. Glad. Good. What's happening? And then Jerry starts, yeah, I'm glad you could get by. I said, holy mackerel, this guy is juiced. I'm thinking, I mean, for real, because Jerry, to my knowledge, did not drink and never drank. And here is him in front of his house ready to do a television show. I said, come on, Jerry, let's get either do this thing or not. And I quit horsing around with it. And he just kept on with this, and it was an embarrassing thing, because I didn't know what was happening, and we ended up with having a whole situation where, in order to continue, because I was so dumbfounded, Jerry had to stop and tell me why he was drunk or why he was pretending to be drunk. And it was an embarrassing situation, but it was kind of funny because it was a one of a kind. And there was Jerry Lawler's world-famous drunk scene right there on television after he explained to me what was going on. So it was kind of a funny incident the way that happened.
Well, I think that's one heck of a note to end on for now. So I want to thank you so much for doing this, Lance. As always, lots of fun talking to you.
It's always great. You folks may not believe it, but I'm telling you, believe it. We do this even when we're not sharing it with you for a podcast or something. Dave and I sit along and talk and talk about wrestling, and I enjoy it, and I hope he does too. David, thank you for asking me, and I hope you will again one of these days out there. Good to be with all you folks out there. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, and Thank you so much, and we'll be back right after this. I'd like to take a moment to explain what you can do to support the Bix Show in one way or another. First, you can post a positive review on iTunes and or Stitcher. Simple enough, right? You can also choose to do your Amazon shopping via my affiliate links. This costs you nothing whatsoever, but a percentage of each purchase is kicked back to me for the referral. To do this, you can go to tinyurl.com/bixamazon, or you can go to davidbix.com and click my referral link, which can be found in the menu, sidebar, and show descriptions. Finally, if you want to speak directly with your wallet, there are two things you can do. The first is to become a patron on Patreon. That means that you choose to support the show with a monthly payment as low as $1. This type of continued commitment to me and my content really means a lot to me, personally, and I promise I will not let you down. If you want to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/davidbix, or you can just click the relevant links at davidbix.com, which are in the menu, sidebar, and show descriptions. Alternatively, you can use the regular PayPal donation button on the sidebar of davidbix.com to send a one-time payment. If you want to pay me directly from your account, my PayPal email address is davidbix@gmail.com. With that out of the way, let's get back to the show. All right, we are back here on The Bix Show, and now I am joined by LaToya Ferguson of AVClub.com, who recently, in addition to being the reviewer for Comedy Bang Bang, Children's Hospital, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and actually now Salem, has been doing Monday Night Raw reviews lately, and very different from the usual Raw review on a wrestling site, because it is, I guess, is AV Club the biggest, in terms of critical reviews, TV site on the internet now?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. So, yes, LaToya Ferguson, you can follow her on Twitter at... I guess I'll spell it out because it's
LaFergs.
LaFergs. So LaFergs. So I'd like to thank you for joining me. And
no problem.
Definitely been becoming a big fan of your reviews lately. From the Raw reviews, I don't know why I haven't been watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, even though I know it's a type of show I'd like. So I'd probably be reading those if I'd been watching it. It's something I should catch up on. But I've very much been enjoying your Raw reviews, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, I kind of wanted to ask is kind of what's your, I don't know what's the best word to use, journey, whatever, history as a wrestling fan? How long, what different stuff, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm 26 right now, going on 27, but I've been basically watching wrestling my entire life. My parents, we'd watch Monday Night Raw in the 90s in the Attitude Era, like as a family with me and my younger siblings, like, I'd be watching Raw with my mom and my brother, and during commercials, we would be doing, like, me and my brother would be doing wrestling moves on the couch with my mom as the referee, all that fun stuff. As I've said before in my Raw reviews, I was really just raised on Raw, like WWE. I wasn't really ever raised on WCW. The only time I ever saw WCW, it was Thunder, and I would just see, like, Disco Inferno and the Wolfpack, and that's really all I remember from WCW just firsthand, really.
Well, yeah, Thunder, not necessarily the best way to get exposed to WCW.
Exactly, yeah. It was a very, very rare occasion that I would ever watch WCW. But yeah, it would just be like Thunder when like my dad was cooking or something like that. It just wanted to put me in front of the TV. So yeah, I've had like my wrestling lulls. I feel like most all of us have, where I fell out of it a little bit, Raw definitely, during Triple H's Reign of Terror in Evolution, because I didn't really need 20-minute promos of him talking about how great he was at that time. But I did, you know, I was loving SmackDown at the time. I was loving the SmackDown 6. Like, I was so into that all the time. But I did kind of fall, I definitely know I quit when Jericho first left WWE, because he's my favorite wrestler of all time. Mm-hmm. So I was very upset about that. And I wasn't as into the sheets at the time. And like, I knew it was fake. Like, I was fake. I was raised knowing that it was, you know, it was staged and all that. But it really hurt, because I was already getting tired of Cena. And then to have him just like beat my favorite wrestler out of the company didn't help me at all. And I guess I came back actually because I had my family and I, we'd moved to Florida, and I was just flipping through channels, and it was Spike TV, like 9 o'clock or whatever. And I just see Kevin Nash, who I recognize, and he was talking to this kid, and they're just talking nonsense, and it was hilarious, whatever it was. This kid was, of course, Alex Shelley. It was a Paparazzi Productions skit on TNA. And that actually kind of got me back into wrestling and just the whole thing, because I was like, hey, there's other stuff happening, not just WWE, and it's pretty great. And that actually got me into independent wrestling and all that fun stuff. So that was my journey, basically.
I'm finding myself laughing that it was Paparazzi Productions, of all things, that got you back.
That's fantastic stuff. I still, to this day, it's the best thing ever.
I mean, I'm an Alex Shelley fan. I mean, I was watching Alex Shelley like when he was a rookie and all that, but just thinking back to that, it just, you know what I mean.
It was some ridiculous fucking shit. Can I curse on here? Because I have a potty mouth.
Yes. I mean, I didn't label it as explicit on iTunes, but I'm not sure how much that actually matters.
Yeah. it should be fine.
No, I'm trying to remember. Was Paparazzi Productions at the same time as the Jackass stuff? Or was it after?
It was post-Jackass. Okay. Yeah.
They had a lot of weird ideas for Kevin Nash around that time.
Yeah. Based on what Alex Shelley has, like, tweeted recently, he said that it was just he and Kevin Nash just, like, improvising shit, and I appreciate that a lot, really. Because what TNA apparently wanted to do was, like, make him, like, Kevin Nash's young boy. That was the gimmick they wanted. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Nash was the one who suggested they're just, like, ridiculous partners in crime. So, led to some fun stuff.
So, have you been watching Impact regularly lately?
I have. I'm like, oh, I haven't seen last week's episode.
Okay. Because I was never much of a TNA guy. I mean, maybe a little in the, like, earlier on, and then really not much for a long time. And I've been really liking it lately. I mean, it was weird, though, because there were, like, for, like, when they first got on Destination America after that first show, which I didn't really like at all. Mm-hmm. And, like, and then it started getting better, but I couldn't watch it because the production was so bad that it was kind of depressing. Like, here's this big, black, dark building. You know what I mean? It was just kind of dank. It didn't sound like anyone was there. But when they did the UK tour, and now that they went back to, I guess it's the original Impact Zone, right? Because it doesn't look like the tiny junior Impact Zone. I've really been liking the shows the last, I guess now, couple months.
See, I'm not, because I had to quit TNA at a certain point because it was just so bad. But, like, I've got back into it now, and it's the best it's been in a while, but I still don't think it's really good. I tweeted about this before. I just feel like there's kind of no heart in the company anymore. It could be, you know, losing AJ or Joe or something like that. But even if I'm watching a good match and I know it's a good match, just everything behind the whole product, it kind of feels hollow, and that's disappointing to me.
Yeah. Other than maybe, like, Spud. Like, when Spud had the main event against
whenever there's
EC3.
Any Spud or EC3 stuff, then it's like, oh yeah, I'm fully into this. I understand this. But then you have things like the Beatdown Clan. And you would think after all these years, TNA would learn maybe not having factions obsessed with power is, you know, a thing we should do. Maybe we should just back away from that for a bit. But nope.
Yeah, it was a little. I'm trying to figure out: is Eric Young still technically part of the Beatdown crew, or was he ever technically?
Part of it, which is he was always an associate, which was just made it even stranger. It's like all of these people of color are thugs, but Eric Young's not part of it. They always made that like especially clear. I'm like, maybe he should be a part of it.
Yeah, it was like is Owen Hart actually a member of the Nation of Domination type of thing?
Well, of course.
But I get what you're saying, though, because, like, I was thinking something like that when I was watching this week's show, that, like, it was Eric Young and Bobby Roode, and I know they're having a good match, and they're both in kind of pressure roles because Young hasn't been a heel for a long time, and he hasn't been the non-goofy character for a long time, and now Roode's a babyface. And what they were doing was fine, but I couldn't get into it. And I was, even though maybe it wasn't necessarily as technically good, I was more into Magnus versus Bram.
Yeah. It's like, they could be giving, I guess TNA is definitely giving a good, decent product. Like, it's a technically proficient product, like, mm-hmm. all around, besides maybe commentary, because I think, like, that commentary station thing is the worst idea they've had, like, in a long time. It looks terrible.
That's some inspired stupidity, I think.
Yeah. There's...
It looks like they're in, like, the corner of, like, a hotel ballroom or something. Yeah.
It looks like they're trapped in there, and it just every time they cut to them, they look so disinterested in everything. I don't know how anyone thought that was a good idea, but it's just sometimes you feel like I said, the heart in what people are doing, like the Magnus or the Bram stuff. Even though, again, I don't care about Bram really, but I'm liking everything about that storyline, honestly, and. The EC3 and Spud stuff is just fantastic, even though, again, most of it's been about just shaving someone's head, which is ridiculous. But it's still great because you feel a kind of a passion behind it that's sorely lacking in a lot of TNA.
Right. And I was never that big on Magnus, who I guess is technically a colleague, well, of mine at Fighting Spirit Magazine, but as a heel, but I've really been liking him as a babyface so far.
I think he was really good as a heel when he first became the heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
And then they kind of just, like, turned him into a goofy thing way too fast. And that was around the time I had to, like, take another break from it, because it's like, no, you had this kind of on a platter. Like, Magnus was finally, like, he'd finally reached, you know, the peak. He finally got to where he needed to be, and they just unraveled it so quickly. But, yeah, I think he can do really well with character when they allow him to.
Yeah. Oh, the thing with the where he got handcuffed and had to kiss Bram's boots.
Yeah.
He was tremendous in that.
Exactly.
So you've been doing the Raw reviews each week at AV Club going back to when? Right after Fastlane? Or was it before Fastlane?
Like, it was right after Fastlane.
Okay. Now, so they have had someone do Raw reviews on and off. Like, they do a one-off, and usually around a WrestleMania or a Raw 1000, or if they had something like, I think they had one for Raw 1000, too. And I don't know, I mean, I don't remember who was writing it, and it's nothing against them. Whenever they had someone else do it before, it never really clicked for me. It seemed like it was usually someone who hadn't been watching lately or whatever, and it just didn't really work. Whereas, so with you, you have been, you know, you've been watching wrestling for a long time. You've been watching continuously again for a long time. And I think it clicked a lot quicker for you, although I would guess getting the format down probably took a few weeks. So why don't you tell me about that a little bit? And also, I'm curious, like, was it sort of asked of all of the writers who wants to do this, or did they know you were into it? So kind of guide me through all that.
Actually, I only had a few days to prepare. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a few days to prepare. Basically, my editor just approached me and asked me, basically said, I think it's time we probably do wrestling reviews, because it got to the point where if you follow, like, just a bunch of AV Club TV writers on Twitter, like, a lot of us are just big fans of wrestling. Mm-hmm. We're either live tweeting it or we're just talking about it just in regular conversations. And I think it's kind of common knowledge to most that I'm, like, the biggest wrestling fan of us all.
Mm-hmm.
So, our editor was finally like, yeah, you should do a review. What show do you think would be the best? And I know people were upset with me for not doing reviews of NXT or Lucha Underground, because those are the fun shows that wouldn't drive me crazy. But it was basically kind of like, well, more people are probably going to watch Monday Night Raw or know the people on Monday Night Raw than, at this point at least, NXT or Lucha Underground. So, like, you know, got to get people to see if there's even any interest in these reviews at all first.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to guess, based on how things have been going pretty much at every other mainstream site on the internet, that the reviews ended up doing at least fairly well so far.
Yeah, so far so good.
Yeah, I mean, the more and more, I mean, we're seeing sites that didn't used to cover WWE or other wrestling stuff do it more and more because of just how much traffic it gets. I mean, and even though it's kind of unfortunate to look at that way, I think you can even apply that to something like Paro Aguayo Jr.'s death a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where I mean, a lot of it I think was also that there was video and that Rey Mysterio was in the match, but...
Mm-hmm.
that and just all sorts of other things too. I mean, you know, we're seeing, it's not always like on the main part of a site, like, but still you have Washington Post's, you know, one of their blogs picking it up. It's just so strange to see some of the places wrestling stuff is showing up now.
Yeah. Part of the reason I think that is, and I know a lot of people like to, you know, bash on millennials for a lot of things. Usually it's nostalgia reasons that people are bashing on millennials. But I've always like kind of thought of it in the context of, well, you know, a lot of millennials are right now, they're the ones who are like in these roles in the media and journalism. And it's not so much like nostalgia as it is people are just finally not afraid to just say, hey, I like this. Like, this is cool to me. And, you know, and I'm going to tell you why it's cool. And personally, for me, I've always kind of looked at pro wrestling as like a great performance art. And like, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to talk about.
I feel like it's still not happening maybe a little slower than I would have expected like a year or two ago, but it still feels like it's moving more and more into being like a pretty firmly entrenched part of, as far as like geek culture genres, that eventually it'll be, you know, whether it's science fiction, anime, comic books, video games, you know, certain TV shows, wrestling, whether as a TV show, which is the way you're covering it, or even as its own thing, I think we're starting to see that more and more. You know, like Uproxx having their, you know, having a whole sub site devoted to wrestling, that type of thing. You know, maybe down the line, AV Club would even have its own sub. I don't know if it's necessarily with the same type of fit, but you know what, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of writing the review itself, I think I said this to you that I thought you got off to a much better start than the other AV Club like one-off raw reviews regardless. But how long did you think it took you to find your rhythm, and what exactly was the right format to do this, both to get it close enough to your other AV Club reviews, the other AV Club reviews from the other writers in general, and also making it different from what would be on a wrestling site?
Well, I knew like two things really going in that I wasn't going to just go, here's a recap match by match or segment by segment. I knew I wasn't going to do that. Like that just was, I wouldn't even do that like in a regular review of a TV show where like this is scene by scene or anything like that. So why would I do that for a wrestling review?
Right.
And then I guess I was kind of happy that I had the framing device of just the road to WrestleMania going into these reviews. So I could just speak to how like it all went into the buildup within that context. I think that helped a lot.
Right.
And
because,
then, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt, but you're not necessarily always going to have as firm a grasp of where exactly the narrative is going. It's WrestleMania. We you know, by the point you started the reviews, we already always have a good idea of what the matches are going to be, even if they haven't been announced or even teased that much. So you knew where you could go. Maybe that'll be a little more of the challenge in the future, but it's definitely the right place to start and to get, I think. Even not just from a traffic perspective, I think just from, I guess for lack of a better term, kind of training you what to do for these, it seems like it kind of worked out for the best.
Yeah. So far, so good. Then I just, as I, because I already take a lot of notes no matter what the show I'm doing, which is probably a big problem. But so 3 hours of raw notes for like each segment. It's insane how many pages of notes I wrote. But then I realized like I had to, because I always need to find a way to frame a certain review. So especially with the first review that I had to do, I didn't want to go in just automatically being negative, but I kind of had to because that was the one where I was saying that basically WWE and Vince McMahon don't really care what the fans' opinions are. They may say they do. That was also like, I believe that was the first Raw with where Give Divas a Chance hijacked R-Truth's stupid Twitter trend he was trying to start. So I had a good time to start, honestly, just with how like frustrated I was with the product, how frustrated everyone else was with the product. It's just like my own personal thoughts on Raw aren't the only thing I'm thinking about when I'm doing my review. I'm thinking about that. I'm thinking about just how it works as a storytelling device in general, how it works as a storytelling device in wrestling, how, like, just people I see on my Twitter, how they respond to it, whether I agree with them or disagree. It's just, I have a lot of thoughts, like, swirling through my brain at one time just to end up with a very, very long review of 3 hours of television.
So, yeah, I mean, that was the next thing I was going to ask. So, the 3 hours, how much harder does that make everything? Like, for example, like, the thing I immediately see just from reading the reviews is that, by and large, you're ending up with something that's going on the site later than most shows.
Yeah.
Just to get through it, figure it all out and get through it all.
Yeah, it's either I put in a half-assed review and to make it up, you know, closer to the time that it airs, or it's going to be a longer review. And I try to, like, at least take maybe at least half an hour just to collect my thoughts before I even start writing it, because, again, that's 3 hours. It's a lot to unpack. After WrestleMania, I had to take an hour where I just stayed away from even thinking about typing my review because, again, it was a lot to unpack, and I had to kind of reconcile the fact that as much as I enjoyed it, that WrestleMania, I didn't seem to love it as much as everyone else. And I know people were kind of upset with me for not just giving it universal praise in my review, WrestleMania. But at the same time, I feel like a lot of people weren't thinking of how I had to watch WrestleMania, which is like basically supposed to be the most fun time of the year for a wrestling fan. I had to watch it with my critic brain on, not just my fan brain. So I watched it again and I enjoyed it immensely once, like, I didn't have to think about it in terms of my review. But at that time, I was just thinking, how does this work in the greater context of storytelling and WWE moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I see you're in Los Angeles, so are you watching the West Coast feed, or do you have a satellite and watch?
I'm watching the feed because I'm not going to wait for it to air here, because that would just be way too late.
Oh, so of course you have a satellite dish, and wink.
Yeah.
You only have
yeah, that
direct
TV
feed.
Situation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't even imagine if you, like, because then it would also be on,
yeah.
So, I mean, going back, like, what, when we had that 3 hour 17 minutes? I don't know why I think that was it. Because I think I kept tweeting just how insane it was. Like, what, like, how did the, like, what were you thinking as that just kept going on and on? Because that was the one with Orton beating down Rollins at the end, I think, right?
Yeah, and this was, that was the same one where Cena, like, tortured Rusev.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, so now I remember your review, too. Like, what is happening here?
And people trying to defend it, which, that's what drives me the most crazy, is when, you know, and I know other people have written about this. I know Brandon Shaw has written about this, but when you have someone who's supposed to be the ultimate babyface, you want them to be a good person. Mm-hmm. And to see, again, some like John Cena, who literally in the early night says, okay, I respect your decision, whatever. I can't just have things handed to me. He literally tortures a man to have something handed to him. That's insane. And you can't listen.
Tortures him in front of his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. And the argument for it is, you know, it's just wrestling, you know, it's nothing to be taken seriously. But you can't use that argument if you're going to use the argument also that John Cena is a hero to kids and they do take it seriously. Which one is it, basically? Because the kids who love him so much are going to see that and think, yep, that's good.
Right, and they weren't even kind of doing it in a more traditional, like, pro wrestling narrative of it being as much of a one-upsmanship or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it wasn't like, oh, he's clever for doing it that way or whatever. Or getting a certain type of revenge. I mean, especially the Orton thing, because it was just so drawn out. And
it's like, what's even the point of watching them at WrestleMania? I'm sure they had a great WrestleMania match, but you're taking away just kind of the buildup of that, because you've already did the stupid, oh, I'm biding my time thing. So it's just a combination of both of those things.
And that whole thing with Orton and Rollins was just so narratively strange. It was like, okay, we already had the turn. Then he left for Now I'm forgetting. Was it an injury or a movie?
I believe it was a movie. I think it was both, actually, because I think it was a movie, but then he also was recuperating from, like, an injury.
And then he comes back, and for some reason, they believe that he wants to go back in the authority, and then...
Which, in my review, I was like, Seth Rollins' whole thing is that he's the smartest person in the room. Mm. This just made him the dumbest person in the room.
And then... It went on for how many more weeks was it? It was at least three. It was like three weeks.
I want to say it was just two, honestly.
It felt like a lot longer.
I think it was two, and the third week was him doing...
Two weeks, three shows.
Yeah, the third one was him playing the dozens at the beginning of the night, and then it ended with him destroying Seth Rollins.
Yeah. So... in terms of the length of Raw, though, like, how much do you feel like it impacts your right, the just forgetting about the even the note part, even though I know that's important, but do you feel like it just impacts the writing, even like in ways maybe you're not even conscious of? Like, does the exhaustion almost make you more likely to dislike an episode, do you feel granted, during the period you've been doing it, there have not really been any especially good shows. Even the post-WrestleMania was not up to previous years, and then...
And that descended into nonsense.
Well, yeah, and the, And, like, the last one or two before WrestleMania were fine, but they weren't, you know... Certainly the one before WrestleMania wasn't up to last year's standards. Last year was very good, especially the end of the show. Oh, the end of the WrestleMania Go Home shows itself was pretty drastic between last year and this year. Daniel Bryan attacking Triple H at the announcer's table, beating up everyone that he was going to be wrestling at WrestleMania and standing tall on the desk. This year was the tug of war. where then they went off the air, they just dropped the belt and left.
Yeah, apparently it was just very awkward, them leaving. I don't want to say the exhaustion kind of affects my review, because honestly, I'm always exhausted because I don't sleep much in general. Mm-hmm. So it's just basically my natural state to be exhausted or high on coffee. Mm-hmm. It does kind of take my soul away, though, and kind of amplifies that more than usual WB does, just because I have to think long and hard. I can't just like turn off Raw and be like, well, I'm done with that for the week, or actually for the day, until I have to watch a different WWE product. But then I have to kind of like stew in it and let it marinate a bit more than usual. That's the only difference, I would say. And that's like the only like real effect on my reviews. Mm-hmm. Then again, I also watched all of season one of The Strain and reviewed that last year. And if I can do that, I can do anything.
I guess I'm going to pivot away from wrestling for a second, just because I guess it was not one of your shows, but one of the things that I kind of love about AV Club, and unfortunately, I think it was for traffic and related reasons, a show that's not being covered anymore, and I guess it turned into two shows, was Switch at Birth and The Fosters. Mm-hmm. Do you have a show that you would love to cover that just doesn't work out because it's on an obscure cable channel, not a giant critical buzz hit, whatever?
Let's see. Any obscure shows? Well, I know for ages I've been wanting to do TV Club Classic on Charmed, but that's still not happening. Me and Kayla Kumari...
I've actually watched it way too much in syndication.
Yeah. Me and Kayla Kumari, we like wanted to do like a double team TV Club Classic on it, but it still hasn't happened. I'm going to keep pitching it until it does. But any like really obscure things? I mean, I got Salem this season, so I think I'm good, actually.
So I'd like to thank you for coming on. I'm going to want to have you back on again and do it for whatever, whether talk current events and stuff. But wanted to at least kind of go over a few things with you first, and didn't want to make this show go too long since I already had the Lance Russell interview, which was wonderful. But I'm trying to keep this from getting too long, at least this show. I'm not saying every podcast I will, but since it seems like wrestling fans are willing to listen to longer podcasts for some reason. I don't really know why.
They just like to hear about wrestling.
Yeah, I just don't know what it is. But So thank you so much. Again,
no problem.
AVClub.com. Every week you've been doing, again, let me make sure I have it all right, Raw, Comedy Bang Bang, Children's Hospital, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, now Salem, as well as doing the Wednesday What's On Tonight. And again, to follow you on Twitter, it is LaFergs, L-A-F-E-R-G-S.
Yep.
And I guess that's it with the plugs for now. So thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back again next Wednesday. Got a guest or two already lined up. And if you're getting this through Voices of Wrestling or just through iTunes or whatever, it's davidbix.com for the podcast and all of the related stuff. I'll post when I'm on other people's podcasts, post preview clips before the podcast goes up, etc. Also, if you want to support the show, you can consider whether it's donating to my Patreon, which is a monthly donation thing. If you'd rather not do that, I have a regular PayPal donation button. Or if you don't have any extra money for donating or whatever, which I understand, there's always the Amazon Associates link, which if you've listened to most other podcasts, you probably understand how it works. You just click on it, do your Amazon shopping from there, and I get a handy percentage of everything that you buy after you click on there. So thanks to LaToya for coming on. Thanks everyone for listening, and I will be back next week. Fix.